Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. If you dig up dirt in your backyard and run it through your fingers, how do you tell if it's soil or dirt? Dirt is a mixture of minerals, air, water, bugs, bacteria, but it's not soil. To become soil, it needs nutrients, microbes, organic materials that enrich the crops we eat and the plants we grow. And here's the thing. If you don't know, Ohio farmers, environmentalists, and lawmakers are going to spend the week of November 10th through 16th educating you all about the importance of healthy soil and how to get there. But here at All Sides, we're going to get a sneak peek. Ohio's garden sage, Deb Kanapke, wears many hats as an educator, garden coach, writer. She's also a soil steward, and she joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Deb.
So nice to be here and to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart.
So you're going to be one of the panelists for Ohio Soil Health Week. Mm-hmm. This is the first time Ohio has designated an entire week to the topic of dirt versus soil. Why now?
Well, there are a lot of things coming together. There's the farm bill. There is a bill that our Ohio legislators are trying to get through for a task force to investigate soil, to look at what we're doing to it, how we can make our soil better. So there's that coming along. And also David Brandt, who was, a soil advocate, but even more than that, he was all about understanding soil and farming and how much soil impacted your end product. Of course, I mean, you're growing your food in soil. And he passed away. And part of this is to honor his commitment to soil health and also OFA's commitment to soil health. And I have had a commitment to soil health once I understood the relationship in the garden between good food, good flowers, good insect populations, and then soil at the foundation of it all.
So I touched on this in the beginning, but what is the difference between dirt and soil?
Something I often say is dirt is what you get underneath your fingernails, and soil is what you honor. It is that sand, silt, and clay component, which we call inorganic, but then it is this massive biological community that is organic, living. You know, living, non-living, although some people say rocks have souls too, but I'll let you do that on your own.
But the soil is definitely alive.
The soil is alive. And it does so many things for us, sequestering carbon, buffering compounds, recycling nutrients, and on and on and on. So to me, soil is an active participant in our lives.
As part of Soil Week and in the lead up to it, there's been a series of videos featuring farmers and others sharing their stories and relationship to the soil. You're featured in one. Yeah. And you talk about how when you moved to Columbus decades ago, you had to completely rethink and redo the soil in your backyard. What did you find underneath the grass?
So we have a hillside ranch. So as you can imagine, when they dug out the basement, all the subsoil went on top, which we found when we dug a deep hole to create an earth oven, because you need a 3-foot hole. And I found a foot and a half of subsoil on top of a line of beautiful topsoil that was about 10 inches thick underneath the subsoil. So my whole backyard was that way. Every time I dug something up, it was subsoil. So over time, and we've been in our house for 40 years, over time, I have let leaves stay on the lawn. We mulch them with our mower. We have a healthy soil underneath our lawn in most areas. And in my garden beds, I'm constantly adding organic matter and leaving the leaves. I'll put that one in there right away.
Yeah, we have a mulching mower. It makes a difference. Yep. You don't want to just like leave whole leaves. That mulching is really
the
kind
mulching
of what
is
helps
important, especially if you have something thick like oak leaves.
I want to play a testimonial from one of the farmers who talked about their soil. Her name is Sophia Bugs of Ladybugs Farm in Youngstown.
You have the ability to bless the soil. Coming out here, taking your shoes off, touching it, saying positive things to it, that is powerful medicine for both you and the soil. Urban growers they're challenged because we have not connected to our farming roots. We're connecting to, we need to be alive and to stay alive and to enliven the rest of the community. It's medicine out here. It's food out here. Resilience is out here. Confidence is out here. And beauty is out here. If you pledge your allegiance to the soil and the mycelium, you'll never go hungry. You'll never go hungry because that's her promise to you.
You know, what you hear in Sophia's voice and yours mm-hmm. is this passion when talking about the soil.
It's a relationship. In my garden, I can't imagine doing anything that would harm the soil. And Sophia feels the same way. I mean, we've talked. Sophia, you know, we've been on a couple committees together. It is our mother. It's the earth. And to use those terms, you know, I've been called a tree hugger and everything. And now, you know, I don't care because there is this relationship. And when we leave this relationship behind, we leave our health behind. We leave our souls behind. I do not put anything on my soil that harms it.
Same.
Yeah.
You're preaching to the choir a little bit. We do yeah. the corn gluten, nitrogen,
yeah.
chicken poop.
We
always try to do it right before it rains, so A, that it sinks in, and B, our neighbors don't kill us.
Yeah, well, and it does have an odor, but it's amazing how quickly that odor goes
yeah.
down. In fact, mulch has more of a long-lasting odor than chicken, composted chicken manure.
And mulch, too. We don't do dyed mulch.
No, never.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Do you have questions about converting dirt to soil? Do you want to know more about Ohio Soil Week? You can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email allsides at wosu.org. You know, when you look at the map of the state soil types, and I had no idea, it's all over the map, literally.
Yes, it is.
We have 12 soil regions.
Mm-hmm.
What's different about these regions?
So soil is based on a lot of different things. It's weathered rock. So it depends on which rock you have, whether it's alkaline, acidic, shale, sandstone, etc. Also time, how old is the soil? How weathered is it? Has it been broken up by freeze-thaw cycles? And there's so many things that cause soil to be a soil type. Is it hydric? Has it been covered in water? So when you look at Ohio, you can see we have old soils in the southeast from the Appalachian Mountains. We have new soils in the northwest, which is was a black swamp. It was underwater. We have erratics or soils that came to us from Canada with the glaciers. So all these things affect soils. And then, of course, we put names to these different types of soils. And some of these soils are good for building on because they're sturdy. Others move. And so you don't want to put a building on a soil that moves or shifts. So we look at soil, and it's not just one personality. So we have, you said there were 12? You counted?
12 regions.
12 regions, yeah.
But there's 400 kinds of soil.
Yes. I was going to say that 12 seemed small.
12 regions, 400 different types, which is, I was like, okay, that's
yeah.
almost as many school districts as we have in the
that's
state
right.
of Ohio.
And you can look up your soil type. There is at Ohio State, you can look up, and I think you can do it online now. When I was in graduate school, we had to rely on a book.
Mm.
But I believe you can look up your soil type online, and I'd have to look up where that is. But so many search engines would probably take you there. But each one has its own personality. And so even though everyone says, yeah, I have clay. Yeah, we all have clay. We have sand, silt, and clay in varying percentages. And it's how those percentages go together and what has happened to that rock over time that is what we grow in.
We've talked about regenerative farming before, but mm-hmm. I think it's worth reiterating as Soil Week is coming up. What are the sort of the principles? How do we go about turning our dirt into soil?
So, and these are things that I did even before I knew that they were part of a regenerative system. But there are five main ones. And I come more from the gardening perspective, but I believe Jim and Molly will be happy to give you
We're going
you
to talk
farming.
To some farmers yes. in just a few minutes.
But one, minimize soil disturbance. Stop tilling every year. Stop destroying the makeup, the structure of soil. Cover the soil with plants. Now, yes, you can use mulches too, but plants are better, and leave the leaves. Keep living roots in the soil. That's trees, shrubs, evergreen ground covers. Think about diversity. Biodiversity is number four. It's not just one thing. You know, we love our lawns, but our lawn should be biodiverse, many different plants in them, like in mine. I can probably name off 10 plants, but I'm not going to. And then number five is integrate livestock. And on a farm, that's easier. In our gardens, that means integrating animal manures. And also, we have worms and insects. Those are animals who are integrated into our soil, so honor them too. But those are the five principles that you can look up on the web if I went too fast for you to write it down.
And Kira, our producer, says it's soilhealth.osu.edu.
Thank you.
So soilhealth.osu.edu, if you want to find your soil type. And I assume that can also help inform what steps you're going to take to going forward.
That is so handy to know. Thank you. I just wrote it down myself. And I used to know the soil type in my backyard, but honestly, I can't remember it now.
So then how we're going to hear from some farmers in a little bit, but I'm hoping you can preview a little bit of this Soil Health Week. What kind of events are we holding? Where can we go find out about them? Where can we go hear you speak on this panel?
Okay, so I'm not sure which panel you're talking about, but it might be the EPN breakfast, which is, and I'm going to be on the sidelines on that one, but that is Tuesday morning at 7:15 to 11 or 11:30 at the 4-H Center. We have 17
on
different events.
Is that November 10th?
That would be November, 1 second. I have it all here. That is November 12th, Tuesday. We have 17 different events, and I don't have time for that.
That's okay.
But there are the soil stories, which are on OFA's website. There's the Martin Hollow Heritage Farm Tour, which is on Sunday the 10th. We have a soil health rally, which Molly will probably talk about, in Athens, Ohio, and that's on the 14th, which would be Thursday. And then on Saturday, we have a virtual screening of Common Ground, which is the sequel to Kiss the Ground, which is all about our soils and healthy soils. And that is, you go onto OFA's website, there is a website you can go to look at all of these events, ohiosoilhealthweek.com. So pretty simple. Again, ohiosoilhealthweek.com. And it's all there. And there are events across the state. So it's not just here in Central Ohio. And several of them are virtual, so you don't have to leave your seat.
Some of them require registration. Some yes. of them have fees attached. Mm-hmm. So you really got to look up what you want to see, where you want to go.
And I will be at some of the Zoom ones, which is nice. I have some conflicts because it's also the Ohio Wildlife Community Conference on Wednesday.
Oh my goodness!
And I have a virtual conference with GardenCom happening, and that's my sustainability hat. So it's going to be a very busy week.
Yeah, it could be a nice break from whatever results we get in the election.
I know. I will either be celebrating or not.
But you can escape and talk about dirt and soil.
And you know, for me, this is a positive action. This is something that everyone can do. It is positive. It is understanding soil. It is growing a pot of flowers for joy. It is growing food.
And if you want to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513. Coming up, a farmer and a retired doctor turned farmer talk soil health. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about the difference between dirt and soil this hour. Ohio's Soil Health Week is running November 10th through the 16th. But raising awareness about the importance of our soil isn't new. President Franklin Roosevelt has said, "The nation that destroys its soil destroys itself." Still with us this hour is Ohio's garden sage, Deb Kanapke. And joining us now are two farmers taking part in that Ohio Soil Health Week. Dr. Jim Lynn, a retired gastroenterologist turned farmer. He raises grass-fed beef at White Clover Farms in Hillsboro. Dr. Lynn, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
And we have Molly Sawash. I'm struggling with your last name. I apologize.
You got it.
Sawash. She's the co-owner and operator of Moso Farms in Athens. Molly and her husband raise grass-fed and finished beef, as well as pastured pork. Welcome to All Sides, Molly.
Happy to be here.
One thing that struck me about both of you is that you're relatively new to farming, just a few years in. Jim, what drew you from gastroenterology to cattle?
So I've always had an interest in farming, and I do not know why, because I did not grow up on a farm. But then, again, I practiced gastroenterology for 35 years, and it became very obvious to me that our healthcare system was more about treating disease than promoting health. And I started to learn quite a bit about the nutritional value of grass-fed beef and other types of foods grown regeneratively. And so before I got too old to do it, I decided to buy a farm and try it myself.
What about you, Molly? How did you get into raising cattle and pork?
Really, a big motivator for starting my farm was my concern for the climate and also my love of working with animals and experience working on other farms. So, through college and through my 20s, I feel like I was steeped in a lot of conversations and reading and listening about the issues facing our world. So action felt important. And I do have this privilege of access to family land. Had experience working on other farms and thought, I really need to just try this and do something about it. And the more I understand about the positive role that livestock can play in building our soils, just the more passionate I am to keep the farm going.
Jim, I understand that when you bought your farm, it had silt loam soil. There was no flat ground. It was all slopes. What changes did you make? How did you keep the soil healthy while moving all the dirt around?
So when I bought the farm, my intention from the very beginning was focused on soil health. So my farm was actually being farmed conventionally in corn and soybean rotations. And my soil, because of the silt loam and the slopes, is highly erodible. And so the very, very first thing you do if you're interested in soil health is to stop erosion. So I planted out my entire farm in permanent grasslands. So everything was converted to permanent grasslands, which dramatically reduces the chance of any erosion. So that was the single biggest thing I did starting out.
I want to take a call from Amel in Hilliard. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, I had a question about weeds. Earlier, Deb was talking about how you should not disturb the soil by like removing roots and shrubs and stuff. And I, like everybody else in the springtime and even the fall, pull my weeds. And actually, I just moved and there's a bed in the back that wasn't being used, that stopped being used. So it's overgrown with weeds. And usually I put leaves like in the fall. So I wasn't sure, like, should I pull my weeds, leave them, put leaves over them, like suffocate them? What would be the best?
So I'm going to echo Jim and what he just said, and that you need to cover the ground. Now, you may not want permanent grassland, but if you're looking at a garden, you want a ground cover. And say it's a ground cover like edible strawberries, and then you plant your other plants between those edible strawberries, and if they're in the way, you take them out and put them upside down and they go back into the soil. But we need to cover our ground because weeds come up where ground is open. So putting leaves down is a great thing. If you have a bunch of weeds now, yeah, pull them up. If they don't have weed seed, lay them back down. That green goes back into the nutrient cycle. And next in the spring, get planting and cover that ground.
And avoid maybe like the Roundup and other choices.
Yeah. Avoid those inputs if at as much as you can.
Molly, you've talked about the need to generate excitement for soil health. Do you mean that for the farming community, the general community, both?
I mean it for both, but I actually think potentially farmers think more about it. And so, you know, I wish that eaters and all of us whose lives are sustained by the soil thought about the kind of farming practices behind their food. Because the nutritional quality of what we're eating, the delicious taste that our food may or may not have, all depends on the health of the soil. So I would love for people to wake up as passionate as farmers about the need for improving our soils.
Jim, Highland County, where you are, was declared a disaster area during the drought this summer. And it was one of the worst hit areas in our state. How do you think your practices for farming, do you think it helped? Do you think it hurt? Like, can you just tell us what it was like going through the drought this summer?
Sure. Although I feel bad, we did finally get some rain and we went from a D4 drought to a D0, and Molly is still in a D4. But anyway, so it all comes down to soil organic matter. When you start to build your soil organic matter and your soil forms these water stable aggregates, it becomes like a sponge. We call it a soil carbon sponge. So when it does rain, it infiltrates and then it holds on to that water. So over the 20 years I've had my farm, we have increased our soil organic matter from 1.5% to 4.5%. And while that doesn't sound like much, even though that organic matter is only 3 to 4% of the mass of the soil, it represents about 95 to 98% of the function. So how it worked on our farm, we did get good rains early on in April and May. And so we were able to absorb and hold on to all of that water. Then the rain shut off and we didn't have any rain from June 1st for the next 110 days. But because we had captured that water, all of our pastures were lush, and we rotationally grazed, but we grazed only 1 to 2 days and let them rest 30 to 40. So I didn't even notice there was a drought until about mid-August. And then for about 1 month, we supplemented hay while we continued to graze to slow down our rotation. So I did so much better than surrounding farms that had not built their organic matter over the years.
Deb, we got an email from John who said he's heard that if we destroy the soil, it can take nature up to 200 years to create a new inch of topsoil. What is the turnaround time?
It varies with the type of environment you're in. Desert soils take longer than temperate soils. Hydric soils, yeah, peat bogs. So there are actual differing times. I don't know how long it takes for an inch of topsoil, but I will tell you, when I talked about when we dug that hole in our yard, the line of topsoil that's on top was about a quarter inch, and that was 63 years ago. So, uh-huh. Well, back then it would have been more like 55 when we did our earth oven, 50, 55. So a quarter of an inch, 50, that's about in line with 200 years, as John said. So, yeah, and I tell people that when you move into a house, for the most part, unless your house has been there for a very long time, you are on a new build site where the soil has been disturbed and you have you have regeneration to do.
Molly, you know, beef tends to get a bad rap when it comes to climate change, primarily because of, well, the methane that cows produce. What distinctions do you draw between how you operate and, say, larger industrial farms?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question, because I think the nuance is where a lot of the wisdom lies. And I was vegetarian through college because of my concern for the climate. A phrase we like to say on our farm is, it's the how, not the cow. Because it's all about how your food is raised. And that's true for beef as much as it's true for a plant-based diet. Any food you're eating, the question of whether it's good or bad for the climate is all about how it's raised. So our beef is raised out on pasture year-round. That means that they are out grazing, depositing manure, which is our most valuable fertilizer on the farm, and managed intensively. So we are rotating them every day to fresh pasture. And the most important part of that is that we are leaving the grass that they just ate the day before to rest, regenerate, and sink deep roots into the soil before it's grazed again. And so they can actually be, managed grazing can be a powerful carbon sink. I was just looking at the project called Drawdown, where a group of scientists documented some climate solutions, and they ranked managed grazing as number 22 out of 93 solutions to climate change. Now, that's very different than maybe a more industrial operation that has cattle concentrated on a feedlot, where manure is actually a liability, where it takes manpower and diesel-powered equipment to move that manure around, and they're not capturing that powerful relationship between the cattle and the pasture species. I don't know if Jim feels this way, but I've heard a lot of livestock, particularly grass-fed and finished operators, say we're more of grass farmers than we are livestock farmers, because the livestock are just the tool to grow perennial pastures that are sinking carbon into the soil.
Jim, I see you nodding your head there.
I agree with that 100%. But now I've gone from being a grass farmer to a microbe farmer. What I've learned about soil biology over the last 10 years just blows me away. And it's those microbes, those trillions of microbes that are making everything work. So when I go out in my pastures, I think about my cows, I think about my grass, and I think about my microbes. So every decision I make, I take all those into consideration.
Is it true, and I guess this is a question for either of you, that grass-fed cow take longer to mature, that it takes about 2 years versus a year? Like that essentially it just takes longer for them to get ready for slaughter?
Molly, you can take that.
Yeah. So In terms of when they're ready for slaughter, what we're talking about is if they're finished and they've developed the intramuscular fat, so that marbling we like to see. And it does, it takes longer to finish on grass. So our cattle are around 26 months when we bring them to the processor, whereas a grain-fed steer maybe is around, I don't know, 16 to 18 months. Is that true for you, Jim?
That's absolutely true. And that's because, you know, they're feeding their cattle just a high starch diet. And they're like couch potatoes eating potato chips. They're in a feedlot, they don't move around. Our animals are out there moving daily, eating grass. And I don't care how good your grass is, you can't put the same number of calories in them as you can, you know, feeding them corn.
Jim and Molly, you know what I'm sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead. Nature's pace. We go at nature's pace.
Sorry about that, Jim. I didn't mean to talk over you. It is so cool to hear you say that because it's the same kind of relationship with understanding soil, but understanding the animals that are under your care and that you're not forcing them to go faster. And that there's also an understanding of the animal is healthier eating grass than eating corn, which is something that has always had an impact on my thinking about raising animals for food.
I pointed out to also note that when you see the price of grass-fed, grass-finished beef, say, in a grocery store, you see it's more expensive. And I think it's more expensive in part because if you're keeping that animal alive for an additional 6 to 8 months, that's an added cost. And I'm glad that you guys could share a little bit about why it costs what it costs and maybe what the benefit of, as Jim said, going at nature's pace could provide. Jim, you're also taking part in a soil carbon study with Ohio State. What are they doing out there on the farm?
So it's very interesting. I have the flyer for that. So this is a study entitled Enhanced Soil Carbon Farming as a Climate Solution. So this is what Molly had suggested, that when we increase the soil organic matter in our soil, well, we're taking carbon dioxide directly out of the atmosphere through the process of photosynthesis to put that in the soil. And so the researchers at Ohio State are leading a multi-state, multi-institution project involving 17 states. And they're collecting soil samples from hay fields, pasture land, and crop land, side-by-side evaluations, and it's over a five-year period where they'll take initial samples and come back. And so what they're trying to do is, you know, collect data showing that we can sequester carbon in the soil. And as Molly suggested, the fastest way we've been able to do that is through rotationally grazing biodiverse pastures. That'll increase your soil organic. But then there's other ways. Cover crops are huge, huge, huge. And it's a big disappointment of mine when I drive the countryside now and see all of those bare fields. You know, those microbes in the soil, their sole food source is the glucose made by the plants through photosynthesis. So when you see a bare field, that's a dead field. Those microbes are just starving to death. So we need to get our soils covered. If you're a grazer, that's easy. You've got perennial pastures. If you're a row crop farmer, you need to use cover crops.
I want to take a call from Sharon in Columbus. She has a suggestion for planting in the city environment. Welcome to Allside,
Sharon. Also, I plant Dutch clover because it fixes nitrogen in the soil, as do all legumes. But I have been planting in the fall, and of course, this fall we had no rain. And so I'm using Olla's, O-L-L-A. That is a desert gardening technique where you bury unglazed pottery and water inside the pottery, and it sweats out and waters at the root level. Now, you can buy official ones for about $60, or you can make your own with silicone glue and 2 8-inch flower pots. You glue one of the holes in one of the flower pots shut, Then you spread your silicone glue around the edge of the other, put the two big ends together, let it dry for about 24 hours, and you bury it. If you have a new hole that you've dug because you bought a cheap shrub at the end of the season, you dig your hole, you put your olla in, you put your plants in, and then you fill with dirt, and then you water in the olla. I have three new shrubs that are thriving along with perennials planted beside them because I just put a little water in the olla on a daily basis or every couple of days if I forget. And they are thriving.
Thank you so much, Sharon. You know, Deb, we've talked about ollas before. Mm-hmm. I think they're such a neat trick. I mean, they would have been super helpful for folks this summer during the drought.
I use them in some of my raised beds for my fall greens this year. My peas didn't do as well, but all of the brassicas and lettuces were extremely happy.
Probably wouldn't work at the large scale that Jim and Molly farm at, but it is good for like a backyard garden. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we're going to talk about the connection between soil health and human health. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about soil health this hour and an upcoming week in November dedicated to the topic. A group of farmers, environmentalists, and lawmakers want to raise awareness about how soil affects our health and the food we eat. Still with us is Ohio's garden sage, Deb Kanapke. Molly Sowash, co-owner and operator of Moso Farm in Athens. And Dr. Jim Linney, a retired gastroenterologist turned farmer in Highland County. He owns the White Clover Farm. Jim, as the doctor in our group, what is some of the latest research showing about how soil health impacts human health?
You know, there's just been an explosion of information there, and it has a lot to do with our technology. Once we developed metagenetics and were able to figure out the human genome, and now we know about the human gut microbiome, and it turns out that the microbiome of the human body has about 100 times more genetic material than human cells. Well, that turns out to be exactly the same in a plant. When you look at a plant, about 99% of its genetic material comes from the microbes that are associated with it, that live on the plant, around the rhizosphere of the roots, and actually live in the plant, known as endophytes. And that's what has connected soil health to human health. We just completed a study with the Bio-Nutrient Food Association, looking at the nutritional value of beef. And this study collected soil samples, forage samples, manure samples, and meat samples. And through a new area of research that's just fascinating called metabolomics, they're able to measure tens of thousands of chemical compounds that are the metabolic products from the meat. They use mass spectrometry. And so the fascinating part about this is we go well beyond minerals and vitamins and proteins and fats now. And we look at this incredibly important group called phytonutrients or secondary metabolic compounds. And those come from the symbiotic relationship of the plant and the microbes. And they get into the meat. You are what you eat. So if the cows eat that, it ends up in the meat. And in this study, we've demonstrated that when meat is produced in healthy, living soil, it'll have 100 times more of the phytonutrients, both biodiversity-wise and quantitative-wise, compared to a feedlot beef. And most all of those phytonutrients are antioxidants and anti-inflammatory. And then the other thing you get is that incredibly healthy omega-6 to omega-3 ratio of 2-to-1, which is absolutely associated with human health. So I think we, through better technology, we clearly have connected our soil health to human health. And we're doing studies now feeding human beings produce and animal products that are grown this way, and measuring different markers, inflammatory markers, insulin resistance, and things like that. So, but it's in its infancy. You're going to see thousands and thousands of research papers on this in the next few years.
Molly, when the federal government comes back, they're expected to pass a farm bill, or at least that's the hope. What are you hoping to see from that bill, or what policy initiatives might you want to see here at the state level?
Yeah, I think across the federal or state level, seeing the support for these vitally important conservation practices that Jim and I have been talking about, with cover cropping, managed grazing, silvopasture, planting trees into pasture, is a big passion of mine. So the more support we can give to all farmers, maybe particularly beginning farmers, to implement conservation practices that the commons is benefiting from, we need to make sure we're supporting the farmer who maybe is carrying the weight of implementing a new, different, expensive, risky practice, but that is going to benefit all of us. And so that those practices that farmers can find support through the Natural Resource Conservation Service, supporting more of those. And then here at the state level, all three of us, Deb, Jim, and I, are involved with the Ohio Soil Health Initiative that is convened through OFA, the Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association. And we're talking about policies that support soil health practices, one being the upcoming Soil Health Week, designating the second week of November as Soil Health Week, and another being supporting a soil health task force to put all of the minds together, legislators, farmers, soil scientists, to come up with a robust plan to improve Ohio's soils.
And speaking of that, Molly, you're holding a rally down in Athens. Yeah. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So anyone in Southeast Ohio or the whole state is invited to come to Athens on Thursday, November 14th from 11:30 to 2:30, where we're going to be celebrating the kickoff of our first Soil Health Week. We're coordinating this with many organizations, one of which is my day job at Rural Action, which is a community development nonprofit. So we'll be at the Athens County Municipal Courthouse with some inspiring speakers, organizations sharing information and activities. I'm really excited to have a great lineup. We'll be hearing from Representative Juanita Brent, grassroots policy organizer Lauren Hurdle, County Commissioner and Farmer Chris Smeal, and then local producers Lindsay Clownig and Jay Brandt. And so encourage everyone to come out to celebrate this important week.
Jim, how are you participating in Soil Week? What events are you going to be at?
I'm going to be at a couple. So we're going to kick off the Soil Health Week. We have a farm tour in Russellville, Ohio, which is in Brown County. It's going to be on November 10th, I believe, from 2 to 4. And we're going to be focused on soil. We're going to talk about doing Brix readings, water infiltration tests. We planted 6 acres of a winter grazing cover crop to look at. So I'm going to be doing that. And then 2 days later, I'm going to be at the at the breakfast that Ohio mm-hmm. State, the EPN, Environmental Professionals Network, is just starting, and they're kicking off Soil Health Week there, and I'm going to be on a panel to discuss that. And then I'm going to Molly's on the 14th. I didn't know about that, and that sounds wonderful. So I'm going to have a busy week there.
Excited you're coming.
Are you having a farm tour, Molly?
No, we held one actually earlier in September, but Jim can come over.
I do want to ask you guys before time runs out, tell us how we could get a hold of your products. If somebody's listening and goes, you know, that sounds like the kind of place where I would want to buy my beef. We'll start with you, Jim. How do people find your food?
So at my website, whiteclovervfarm.com, we sell everything locally. We sell by the quarter, half, and the whole. And I'm encouraging more and more farmers to do this. All you can do is my farm is get on a waiting list. We're sold out every year, and 75-80% of my customers are returning customers. So I need to get more people out there producing this high quality beef, because there is a huge demand for it.
What about you, Molly?
Yeah, you can find our products online as well at mosofarm.com, M-O-S-O farm. We sell through our online store, similar to Jim, quarters, halves, and whole beef, but we also sell individual cuts that you can pick up every week from our farm, every week on Saturdays at the Athens Farmers Market, and we also deliver to Columbus monthly. We also sell pastured pork that's raised on non-GMO feed, and all of that, plus our friend's chicken over at Pasture Fowler, we sell through our store and at the farmer's market.
And for those wondering, quarter, half, whole, I mean, you're talking over 100 pounds of beef, right? This is like you might need a deep freezer. Or you could go in with friends. That's one solution if you don't have a big fridge, right, Deb?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we've had customers do that, three families going in on a half or even a quarter if they just have a small freezer. It really is the most economical way for a customer to purchase this really high quality meat, because it's a lot less labor for the farmer to, you know, ship off a half or have a customer pick up a whole cow, then handle, you know, every single cut or show up at market. So I really encourage people to invest in a deep freeze or go in with families on buying in bulk.
Finally, I want to talk a little bit about Dave Brandt, a Carroll County farmer who ran Walnut Creek Seeds. He has passed away, and Soil Health Week is honoring his memory. He's credited with mentoring a number of farmers. Deb, can you tell us a little bit about his legacy?
You know, I am probably not the best person to talk about David Brandt. I know of him, and I know of his work. But Jim, didn't you work with him directly? As you were getting your farm together, I just know that he has helped so many farmers understand the relationship between soil and animal health and human health, and was part of the whole Kiss the Ground, Common Ground movie ideas that we're now showcasing in some of our Soil Health Week events.
Yes, I knew Dave Brandt very well. I met with him many times. He was just this gentle, generous giant, big old guy, just a smile on his face all the time. And I don't think he was formally educated much, but he was as smart as anybody. And his generosity is just unbelievable. He'd spend so much time with you. When I started out and trying to learn about cover crops, you know, he would spend hours talking to you, and that has carried on in his family. So we planted this 6-acre cover crop, winter grazing cover crop, for the farm tour on November 10th. And so I went to Walnut Creek Seeds to buy the seed. I'd ordered the seed ahead, and I went to pick it up, and I got my invoice, and it said zero. And so Ann Brandt, his daughter-in-law, who runs the seed company there, just gave it to me. You know, she said, if this is for education, we're in. So they have just been a great family. And he was so funny. I mean, anybody that ever met Dave would always remember Dave. And what he did on his farm, he started this stuff before we knew anything about what we know now. And he has changed. He has put so much soil organic matter, they can no longer classify his soils. They just have too much organic matter. And he's had Ohio State there. All kinds of researchers were there, and he shared his farm. And yeah, just a great, great guy.
That was Dr. Jim Linney, a gastroenterologist turned farmer in Highland County. You can find his beef at White Clover Farm. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you to Molly Sawash, co-owner and operator of Moso Farm in Athens. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anna.
And as always, thanks to Ohio's Garden Sage, Deb Kanapke.
Pleasure to be here.
You can find more information about Ohio Soil Week online and at WOSU.org. Thanks so much for listening to All Sides, right here on 89.7 NPR News.